Pull up a chair. I want to tell you about a sound, or really, I want to tell you about the absence of one. Because if you were a German soldier dug into the mud on the Eastern Front in 1942, dead tired, freezing, trying to steal an hour of sleep, the thing that would wake you was not a roar. It was a whisper. A soft, swishing hiss up there in the black, like somebody sweeping a broom across the sky. And by the time you heard it, it was already too late. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hangar. Today we are going to talk about the bravest aviators most people have never heard of. They flew airplanes made of plywood and canvas. They flew them at night. They flew them with no parachutes, no radios, no guns to speak of, and for a long stretch, no respect from the very Air Force they were bleeding for. The Germans called them the Nachthexen, the Night Witches, and once you know their story, I promise you will never look at a little open cockpit biplane the same way again. Before we climb into that cockpit, let me tell you who's keeping the lights on today. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story, and believe me, the women I'm about to describe earned every story they carried. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's set the scene. It's 1941. Germany has torn into the Soviet Union, and the fighting on the Eastern Front is the kind of savagery that's hard to put into words. Whole cities are burning, and across the Soviet Union there are young women, some of them barely out of their teens, who already know how to fly. They'd learned in the flying clubs, the aero clubs the government had set up in the 30s. A lot of them were flight instructors already. They knew airplanes, and they wanted in. The problem was, nobody wanted them. Combat flying was for men. That was just the way of things. Enter a woman named Marina Raskova. Now here's where it gets interesting. Raskova was famous. She was the Soviet Union's Amelia Earhart, a record-setting long-distance flyer, a national hero, a face everybody knew, and she used every ounce of that fame. She went straight to Stalin himself and made the case that these women pilots were being wasted, and she won. In October of 1941, the order came down to form three all-female air regiments: pilots, navigators, mechanics, armorers, the whole outfit, women top to bottom. One of those three became the 588th Night Bomber Regiment, and that's our story. Now, picture what these young women were handed to fly. You might imagine a sleek fighter, a big multi-engine bomber, something with teeth. No, they got the Polikarpov Po-2. Let me tell you about the Po-2, because you have to understand the airplane to understand the miracle. It was a two-seat biplane. Open cockpits, one behind the other. It was designed back in the late 20s as a trainer, a primary trainer. This was the airplane Soviet student pilots learned to fly in. The equivalent of our Stearman or a Piper Cub, wood frame, fabric skin, a little air-cooled radial up front, putting out maybe 110 horsepower on a good day. Top speed if you were patient and the air was cool, was slower than the stall speed of some of the German fighters hunting them. Think about that. A Messerschmitt could stall and fall out of the sky trying to fly, slow enough to line up a shot on one of these things. It had no armor, no radio, not at first, no guns to defend itself, not really. And no parachutes for the crews, again, not for a long while. You flew sitting on a wooden seat in the freezing open air with a slipstream tearing at your face, and if you got hit, you rode it down. So how in the world do you turn a fabric-covered flight trainer into a weapon that terrifies a modern army? You use the night, and you use your head. Here was the tactic, and it is just beautiful in its cleverness. The 588th flew only in the dark. They'd take off from rough forward fields, sometimes just a strip of dirt near the front line, and puddle jump toward the German positions low and slow. Each little Po-2 could only carry a couple of bombs, sometimes slung right under the lower wings. A tiny bomb load compared to a real bomber. So they made up for it with sheer, relentless repetition. And here's the signature move, the thing that gave them their name. As they got close to the target, the pilot would throttle back. She'd pull the power all the way to idle, and sometimes cut the engine altogether, and the little biplane would settle into a glide. Silent. Coasting down through the dark, no engine noise to give them away. The only sound was the wind sighing through the wires and struts of that old biplane rigging. That soft broom-sweeping hiss. That was the whisper. That was the last thing a lot of men on the ground ever heard. They'd glide in, release the bombs on the encampment, the supply dump, the fuel, the sleeping soldiers. Then the pilot would firewall the throttle. That little radio would catch and bark to life. And they'd claw back up into the black and turn for home. And then they'd do it again, and again, and again. A single crew might fly 8, 10, 12 missions in one night. On the worst, busiest nights, some of them flew 18 sorties before dawn. Land, rearm, refuel, take off. Land, rearm, refuel, take off. the armorers, the women loading those bombs by hand in the freezing dark, their fingers split open and bled. They kept loading. Let me put you on the ground with the Germans for a second, because you can't understand the psychology of this without it. You're an experienced Wehrmacht soldier. You've faced tanks, artillery. You've made your peace with the big terrors. But now, night after night, you cannot sleep, because at any moment out of total silence, with no warning growl of an engine to let you dive for cover, the bombs just arrive. You never hear them coming until that faint hiss, and by then you're already scrambling. It wears a man down to nothing. Exhausted troops are beaten troops. The harassment was the whole point, and it worked so well. The German command reportedly promised an Iron Cross to any pilot who could bag one of these sewing machines, as they nicknamed them, for the little chattering sound the engine made when it was running. But knocking one down was harder than it sounds. Flying that low and that slow, right down in the weeds, meant German fighters diving to attack risked flying themselves straight into the ground, and the Po-2 was so nimble, so absurdly slow, that a witch could stand it on a wingtip and turn inside anything the Germans put up. Their best defense was to be too slow to catch and too low to dive on. They turned every disadvantage of that little trainer into a shield. Now, I don't want to paint this as some grand adventure. It was slaughter, and it took a terrible toll. Consider what they were doing in the open cockpit. Winter on the Eastern Front, 40 below. The wind chill in an open cockpit doing 60-70 miles an hour is a cold that gets into your bones and stays there. Women came home with frostbite on their faces. The controls could freeze. If your engine took a round of tracer fire, remember what the airplane was made of. Wood and fabric doped with flammable lacquer. It went up like a torch, and with no parachutes in those early days, the crew had exactly nowhere to go. There's a night a lot of the histories return to. 1943, the regiment lost 4 aircraft in a single night to German fighters. 8 women. Gone in a few minutes over the front. After that, they finally got parachutes. It shouldn't have taken that. And still they flew. Let me give you the number that ought to stop you cold. Over the course of the war, the women of the 588th flew more than 23,000 combat sorties, 23,000, in plywood trainers at night. They dropped, by the reckoning of the historians who counted, something on the order of 3,000 tons of bombs on the enemy. This was not a stunt. This was a sustained, years-long campaign flown by a few dozen women in the most primitive combat aircraft on the entire front. Let me tell you about a couple of them, because they were not symbols, they were people, Nadezhda Popova. She flew hundreds of these missions. There's a night people tell about where her aircraft was shot up and she had to put it down, and later she said she counted dozens of bullet holes in the airplane, in her map, in her helmet, and she went back up. She flew, by her own count, more than 850 combat missions before it was over. Later in life, when reporters asked her how she did it, she talked about looking up at the night sky and just refusing to believe it was possible she could die. You need a little of that, don't you? To strap into an open biplane and glide silently toward men who want you dead. And there was the matter of who these young women were underneath the flight suits. They were, a lot of them, girls in their late teens and early 20s. And there's a detail I love because it's so human before missions. Some of them would find a stub of pencil and use it to darken their eyebrows or save a scrap of something to put a little color on. They wanted to feel like themselves. They'd sew scavenged material to line those thin uniforms against the cold. They pinned flowers, when they could find them, to the cockpits. And then they went out and terrified an army. The regiment became the most decorated in the Soviet women's air units. A whole slate of them were named heroes of the Soviet Union, the highest honor the country had. They earned it in the coldest, loneliest, slowest airplanes in the sky. Now let me connect this to why it matters to us. Sitting here in the hangar all these years later, we spend a lot of time, and rightly so, being reverent about the heavy iron. The fortresses, the Lancasters, the Mustangs, the big brutes with the big engines and the big guns. And they deserve it. But there's a lesson in the 588th that I think every one of us who flies little airplanes ought to hold on to. It's this. The airplane is never the whole story. The pilot is the story. Those women were handed the least capable combat aircraft imaginable. An airplane most of us would look at as a gentle Sunday morning trainer, a fair-weather tail dragger, to go boring holes in the sky. And through nothing but skill, nerve, discipline, and a deep understanding of what their machine could and could not do, they turned it into something the German army genuinely feared. They didn't have power, so they used stealth. They didn't have speed, so they used the dark. They didn't have a heavy bomb load, so they flew all night long and made it up in volume. They knew their airplane down to the last flying wire, and they flew it to the absolute edge of what it could give. Every one of you who has ever slipped a little airplane into a short strip, who has managed the energy on a dead stick glide, who has flown at night with your heart in your throat, you share something with those women. Not the danger, thank God, and not the war. But the fundamental truth of it, that a modest airplane in the hands of a pilot who truly knows it can do extraordinary things. Back when avgas was cheap and airspace was free, we used to say a good pilot could take a bad airplane and make it sing. The Night Witches sang in a 100-horsepower biplane in the dark at 40 below with an army shooting up at them. And they kept singing for years. So the next time you walk past some tired old open cockpit biplane at a fly-in, some fabric and wood trainer that looks like it wouldn't hurt a fly, I want you to give it a second look. Because an airplane just like it, flown by young women whose names most of the world forgot, helped turn the tide on the bloodiest front of the whole war. One silent glide at a time. If you want to read more about them, and you should, the accounts by the historians who tracked down and interviewed the surviving pilots decades later are where the real voices come through, Nadezhda Popova and the others in their own words. That's where I first heard that broom in the sky description, and it's stuck with me ever since. You can find the rest of what we do over at RadioHangar.com, 23,000 sorties, in a trainer at night. Let that sit with you tonight when you're warm in bed and the sky's quiet. Somebody once made that quiet sky the most frightening thing in the world. I'm Taildragger. Keep the dirty side down, and I'll see you next time.